Okay, good morning, everybody. Is this microphone working? It's working. Okay, good, because I can't hear anything. I'm going to talk about management of organizational competency. And in my yesterday's lecture about the Wiki approach, I mentioned this conflicting terminology and some things using different words meaning the same thing, using same words meaning different thing, and so on. So during this lecture, what you might want to think about is, what is the difference between competency management and knowledge management? Is there a theoretical difference? And then the other question is there a practical difference? Because each of us in our organizations, we do things differently. The practical solutions will be different. And whether it's theoretically called knowledge or competence management might be a bit like a, well, it's a bit like a line in the water. Something about the outline of my presentation. I'm first going to talk a little bit, or maybe not, maybe a bit more than a little bit, about theory. This is based on a draft IAEA document, Mapping Organizational Competency, which is in some stage of approval process. Now I can't remember exactly to which DG meeting it was submitted to, but this is something that we drafted last year with some consultancy meetings. And after the theoretical part, I'm going to give you an example from my corporation, how on the corporate level they see our competence management and our competence frameworks. And I hope to provide you with some tools to evaluate the practical solutions and the practical applications. Okay, I will start with competence management and knowledge management. Is there a difference? And if you Google this terminology, you will find hundreds of definitions for both. Some say that they are the same, some think they are very different, and so on and so on. But what I've collected here is kind of a generally how the difference is understood, or at least described theoretically. If we start with the definition of competency, this is now a very short definition. I'm going to open that a bit more in later on in this presentation. But normally competency is, it's an ability to perform a task to a defined standard. And when we are managing our competencies, what we usually do, we define some competency requirements for roles, and then we map people against these requirements, and then we need to decide about the actions. What are we going to do with these people so that they would meet the requirements, and so on. And this is a very typical approach if we are talking with HR, or if we are talking with training, if we're talking about job induction, and so on. Then if we think about knowledge management, I'm not going to repeat this because this is what you've already seen on this week. And knowledge management might be, not necessarily, but often is, managing knowledge as knowledge, not via the people. And if you think about the examples you've heard during this week, I would say John Day is a very pure example of KM. What he talks about is managing knowledge as knowledge. I don't think you mentioned people very many times in your presentation. Exactly. They get in the way. Whereas when you're listening to David, David concentrates on people. He thinks about knowledge as something that is in the people, and he's always talking about what do we do with our people, what can we do to them, and so on and so on. So there you can see two faces of the same problem. And theoretically, you might think that some of that is closer to managing knowledge, and some of it is closer to managing competencies. Moving on to the definition of competency. Now I'm talking about individuals. And later on, I'm going to talk about this on the organizational level. So this is a bit longer definition for competency. You will see in the agency documents, it's often defined as knowledge, skills, and attitudes. But of course, it's not any old knowledge, skills, and attitudes. It's the ones that are needed. So the ones that are needed to fulfill some objectives, to perform a job to a standard. And if you're taking a very kind of a control-based view to your people, then you might even think that it's that combination of knowledge, skills, and attitudes that you can observe and measure based on the behaviors of the people. And that is, for example, what my corporate HR is very strict on following. Well, how are they then linked to anything? Where do you get those requirements for roles? Well, most organizations, they derive their competency requirements for objectives of the organization or objectives of the teams and so on. and most of them have some sort of a model to communicate these requirements to people. And this is an example from Korea, and the reference I've put there is proceedings of this year's HRD conference held at the IAEA. And in this approach, which I think is a very, very neat competency model, they've decided that defined that their individual competencies that they need, they consist of technical leadership and common, which I assume means some sort of general competencies. That's what the individual means. And they affect or even make most part of their organizational competency. And again, they are connecting it to their what they call competency architecture, which some part of it is individuals, and some part of it is actually group competencies. So this is already moving towards the organizational competency, which I'm going to talk about in just a few minutes. Before that, another very different example of a competency model. This is from an IAEA document from 2001. It's training regulatory body personnel. And for the regulatory body competence management, they are still using the same model. And at least in Finland, I know that our regulatory body is using this model. So what they have defined four key areas where the regulatory body personnel need competence. So there is legal and regulatory parts. There is technical disciplines. You can't do inspections unless you understand the technology. Then there is practices. How do you actually perform audits? And then there is this behavioral part. And I think this is also something that is very typical in organizations. I'm not from a regulatory body, but we still have something very similar going on in my organization. Okay, organizational competency. So if individual competency could be defined as knowledge, skills, attitudes that allow you to perform to a standard, then this definition of organizational competency is very similar. So it's ability, whatever is ability, of an organization to meet its objectives effectively and efficiently. And then there are some bullet points following. And with those bullet points, what we try to emphasize is that an organization or a group of people is never just a direct sum of the individuals. It's always something much more. When you do your group work, as a group, you are doing something that is much more than just some of the individual works. I'm sure you've all participated in group work where you just divide it in six parts. Everybody does their own part, never talks to each other, and so on. And you can clearly always see, based on the result, that sort of working does not really produce very good results. So the list here is that there is people and their knowledge included, but there is also behaviors and culture, and this, of course, now in the organizational level, not just the personal values. And you've heard several times that knowledge is embedded in processes, procedures, and so on, and that's also included in the organizational competency. And finally, the organizational structure, the way the organization functions, the way it has organized itself, officially or informally, is part of their organizational competency. Next I'm going to show you two models which try to explain a bit further the concept of organizational competency. And this picture tries to give you some sort of an overview of these two models and how they can be linked. How many of you have heard the model about core competencies, collective competencies, and individual competencies? David has? Yeah? Okay, I think it's a very typical model, and you will see it several times. And the other model here, which says human structural and relational, human what structural what you will see in just 2 minutes, that's from an intellectual capital model. How many of you have worked with or seen intellectual capital models? Well, I'm sure more than just Ken, John, and I have seen them. Okay, so the core competency concept, I'm not sure if Chavinan was the first to present it, but his paper is normally the most cited one. And the strategic core competencies are normally defined as that's the organization's fundamental strengths. That's why the organization succeeds or fails. And as you can see in the description here, there are not many individual mentions. There are things like learning on organizational level, how you work as an organization, and so on. But this might also be something that is very, very difficult to get a hold of this, because it's not very, very tangible. On the second level, they usually list collective competencies, which talks about the teams. How do your teams and groups perform? And the competencies in this model are divided in three parts. So there is the technical part, which is very understandable. There is the interaction, which is related to your task. That's also, of course, we need it. But what I found very interesting in this model is the third part, the social interaction that is not necessarily directly connected to your task. You've all worked in the teams, so you know that in order to kind of keep the team spirit, to keep the things going on, you need to share a little bit more than just the task-related things. And that's what the third part is about. And in this document, we've renamed it to knowledge-sharing culture, because that is the terminology agency often uses when they talk about these sort of things. And finally, there are the individuals. Most of the competencies, anyway, they are, without the people, you don't really have much of the competencies in the organization. Without people, you don't have much of the competencies. People take much of it out. And now John is going to say,
you need more than people.
Yes, and he's saying you need more than people. Lovely, thank you.
We're having a wiki war.
Okay, moving on to the second model. So if I go a few slides back, here you saw the core collective and individual competencies. It kind of explains the depth of the organizational competency. And now we are going to the lateral direction. And this is intellectual capital model by these people. If you've seen intellectual capital models, you know that there are several of them around. And probably another model would also help to explain the organizational competency. In this model, the organizational competency is divided to human, structural, and relational capital. And in this thinking, the human and structural part, that's what's inside the organization, and the relational part is what is outside. That's the relationships to other organizations, to your consultants, maybe to your retired personnel, also maybe to your future personnel. Most nuclear organizations have some sort of cooperation going on with educational institutions. Human capital here, it's not only the individuals, it's also the groups, the collective. The structural part is what I find very, very interesting, and this is what I found very, very important in my organization. In structures, you have the formal structures. You have the organizational structure, you have the processes, you have the procedures, you have the rules. In nuclear organizations, there's loads and loads of processes and rules going on. But also, you have the informal part. That is how the people really work. What happens when they're actually doing the job? They have the procedure, but how do they actually work? It also includes the communication, the interaction, and so on between the individuals. And I think I've listed there also communities, yes, communities of practice, corporate culture, all that sort of things are included in the informal part. And now, John, you are going to say something about communities of practice being also formal.
Yeah, you can formalize communities that are all and they're part of human capital and structural capital.
In this model, they are part of structural capital. Thank you.
And you can have external ones which improve your relational.
Yes, that's true. So we could have communities of practice also in the relational capital. That's true. Thank you. Okay, the document I was referring to was actually called Mapping Organizational Competency. And now I've been talking about what is competency. And this next slide summarizes how was competency mapping defined. How did we define it in that document? I think maybe when we started, we wanted to have a very clear definition. This is how competency map looks like. But when we talked with several organizations, first with David Star Alliance Group from US, and then with some European organizations in another consultancy meeting, we realized that everybody has a bit different way of presenting their competencies. And the most important thing is that the competency map should enable the organization to utilize the information or knowledge on the map. Some organizations said that, okay, we produce just lists. They are organized lists, and that's our competency map. And what can you say? If it works for them, it works for them. And some organizations say that, okay, we have something very complicated. For example, John's example is a very kind of concept map-like knowledge map, and so on. So why do or why should the organizations do competency mapping? You don't do it just to produce a visualization. There has to be some more benefits of it. And to say it in a very simple way, it's a tool for competency management. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about next. But before that, there is one example of a generic competency map from my organization. I've been doing competency mapping with our groups for some time, and with very different groups. And it turned out in my organization that depending on bit on their task, on the process they're working with, they want their competency map to look a bit different. And this generic map is something that worked with quite many of the groups. And I think I developed this with our control room design group. And what we started with, of course, we have to know what we're talking about. So there was a name for the process. There was an objective for the process. And there are some things that need to be finished before you start the process, before you start the task. There is, for example, you need to know something about legislation, you need to know something about standards, maybe you need to do something before you start working. In my organization, cooperation was something that everybody mentioned. I think they even mentioned it before they started talking about their own tasks. They share sub-processes with some other experts. They need input from some other people. They provide output. Or just informally, they need to be able to collaborate with people coming from a different expertise area. And finally, there is, what do you do? What are the steps you need to take in order to finish your process? And in this case, we started it from the requirements. What is required of you, and what do you do in order to fulfill this requirement? So you can see that this form of competency mapping is very, very closely related to what do you actually do. In my organization, we've had the problem of listing all sorts of very general competencies and decided that we can't do anything with them. So that's why we chose this approach. We're very strictly talking about what do you do, why do you do it, and so on and so on. And if you think about in terms of the definitions of knowledge you've seen this week, no how, no why, no what, and so on and so on. I didn't develop this map with that model in the back of my mind at all. But now that I look at it, the most of those things are visible on this map. You can see these clearly are know what. You need to know about standards and legislation. Here you go to the know who part. You need to collaborate with people. You need to be able to talk to, even if you're from process engineering, you need to be able to talk to the automation engineers. Otherwise, you will be designing something that cannot be done on site. And so on and so on. And this last part would be what we would call know how. Okay, moving on to competency management. That is why we do competency mapping, because we want to enhance our competency management. And the definition we use for competency management is that a collection of processes which is used to identify and evaluate the current strengths and future needs of an organization, and finally to implement the required corrective actions. So it has to be connected to something that you need to do. And the document describes these 11 components of the competency management in more detail, but I'm just going to give you the titles. And if we start from here, I think alignment with the mission and alignment with the requirements, that's quite clear. Your organization has to achieve something, and for example, regulatory body or the government is requiring something, and so on. And you need to make sure that your competencies are able to answer to those requirements. Understanding organizational capability. That is what, in my organization, turned out to be very, very important. We have been operating for nearly 40 years, and we have been our competency and knowledge management for a long time, it developed somehow implicitly. And the first thing we started to do is we wanted to understand, why do we succeed and why do we fail? What are our main strengths? And it wasn't an easy task to answer. We had lots of list of that we need reactor physics, we need this and that, but none of that explained why do we actually succeed or fail. Managing risk, you've heard already presentations about managing the risk. Managing externally sourced competencies. This is something that happens to every nuclear organization at some point. Somebody decides to outsource part of your business. And necessarily, as a knowledge management, as a business manager, you have no influence on that. But it clearly affects the way you will start to managing those competencies. For example, in my organization, somebody has outsourced part of the reactor work that we need during the outage. And of course, for the first couple of years, it all goes very well. Then you realize that these guys are actually starting to work for other industries, for other companies. And then you realize that I can't get a hold of them anymore. Maybe next year, when we're going to outage, we can't do anything about our reactor because the reactor guys are working to paper industry. So it needs completely different type of competency management. You've heard about recruitments, building teams. So of course, we were talking about collaboration. We've been talking about collaboration a lot. And yes, most of organizations need to improve all the time. So improving organizational competency is part of the competency management. The last theoretical slide I'm going to show you is about the context of competency management. David has just showed you examples from different American organizations, and he said several times that this would not work in Palo Verde, they do this and that differently because they are different to us, and so on and so on. So all organizations are different. There are organizational cultures, there are national cultures, and even the type of the task you are working with will affect the way you manage your knowledge, the way you manage your competencies. And a very typical categorization of knowledge or competency management models is to use like a four-quadrant model. And the one that I'm going to present you and the one that we are using in this document is based on what Bhatt has published in 2002. And the two dimensions in this model will be the type of interaction that you need in your organization and the type of tasks you have in your organization. And the quadrant model looks like this. If we start with the interaction part, there are tasks that are very independent of each other. You have a single expert doing his work and contributing and so on. He's the one who's producing the results. And to manage that competency is very, very different to manage tasks where you really need collaboration between different roles. If I think about, for example, my company, the reactor physicists who do the reactor pattern design, reactor loading pattern design, they work quite independently. Of course, they need to collaborate with a reactor engineer, but still, those guys work with their computer, they are very focused and so on. But then if I think about our automation renewal project, we have a very old automation system and we need to renew it now, and that needs everybody. The automation, the process engineers, it needs the serious accident management people, it needs the control room design and so on. We can't manage that without managing them as a one big group. They are very, very interdependent. And the other dimension is, what are the tasks like? Even in nuclear power plant, there are lots of tasks that I would call routine. You do the same maintenance work every year. Nothing changes, and you follow the procedures very clearly. You don't have to solve very novel problems every time you do it. And then the other extreme would be maybe nuclear design or R&D, where your problem is not specified at all. It's a very, very open problem. You have to solve new problems every single day, and so on and so on. And there you can see that the way you manage competencies in even using this type of quadrant model, it will be very different. For example, if your people work with, they have independent tasks, which are very routine, managing that competency is very different to managing this bit, where you have everything depends on each other and all the problems are new. I've added some examples on this slide, and I think they are also found in the document, but don't take them too seriously. In operations, we have things that fall also into this category, and also in maintenance. And in our R&D, we actually have guys who fall in this quadrant as well. So it's not to say that this is how the world looks like. It's just an example where you most likely find this type of tasks. Okay, that was the theoretical part, and then just shortly I'm going to show you this one. This is now career development framework. That's the competency model that my corporate HR uses. And I come from a corporate which has 10,000 employees, and not all of them in nuclear. So we have thermal power, we have hydropower, we have electricity networks, and all sorts of things. We have gas plants and so on. And actually, most of our employees are in Russia. So this is not nuclear specific, and it's going to be very, very general. And that's also an example for you. What happens when you work in practice? You will have non-nuclear business areas. You will have people coming from the corporate telling you things and so on. And still, you have to kind of find your way through all this. And you may want to, I'm not sure if this is filmed, how much can I criticize this, but you may want to think, does this really address to the problems and issues and requirements you've heard during this week? I'm going to skip. Yes, this is what we want to be. But we want to be the next generation energy company. And what my company believes in, that we want performance and growth, as all commercial companies want. And we believe that we gain it by having mission and strategy, performance management, and leadership and culture. That's the combination of things we need. And our career development framework, where the corporate competencies are related to, it's connected to these two bits. So it's performance and it's leadership. The three tools that we have on the corporate level, we have defined job families and competencies connected to them. We have a performance development process. So it's a sort of a yearly process where you talk about what is my task, what do I need to achieve, what competencies do I need. And then we have competence framework structure. Our job family concept looks like this. We have defined these job families. And within each family, we kind of call it you have a dual ladder career opportunities. You can take the manager career. And then there are different levels of managers, or you can be a specialist. And of course, there are different levels of specialists. And the main difference between these two is that managers get better salary, but specialists have much nicer jobs. And they are all linked to Fortum level competencies. And if you look at the job families, this is what we have to live with also in the nuclear field. These are very, very general. There is like human resources, IT, so on and so on. And if I think about our about 1,000 nuclear experts, where do they go? Most of them actually goes to operations and maintenance and project management and engineering. And if you think about all the different fields of expertise you need in a nuclear power plant, two job families is not very much. This is the development process we have. This is part of the way we manage our competencies. So I think it's very basic. Well, most of you have seen something like this, and most of you have a similar process. So at some time of the year, you ask, what do I need to achieve? What do I need to do? What sort of competencies do I need? And how do I develop myself? And then we make a development plan. And of course, this should now be somehow connected to the corporate objectives and to the objectives of your team, to the objectives of your power plant. But if the process is drawn like this, it's not very visible. But in practice, what our team managers do, when they hear talk about what do I need to achieve, they take into account that, okay, we are in this and this stage of our power plant refurbishment projects. We are in this and this stage with our knowledge. I'm going to run out of guys who are able to design safety classified pipelines, for example, and that's why you're going to be doing it this year. This is how we see our competencies in Fortum on the corporate level. So it's a sort of a triangle. On the top there is the leadership, then there are the job family competencies. I showed you an example of our job families. And then on the bottom of the triangle there are skill areas or skills. And what I've been wondering ever since this HR consultant developed this was, why are these skills and why are these competencies? And the same. And it's all embedded in key behaviors and values. And actually, our key behaviors, they are defined. We have four key behaviors. So this is how my corporate HR defines what is competency. This is very similar to what you've already seen, and this iceberg model is something everybody uses. So there is a part that is very easy to observe, very easy to measure. It's knowledge and skills. Now you might think that, okay, we have tacit knowledge. Is that easy to measure? And then there are lots of underlying factors, value, self-image, and so on and so on. And some of it actually might go into an area that companies should not be saying anything about. Is it really the company's business to say something about your personal values? However, your personal motives, your personal self-image, and so on, might affect to which type of career you are interested in, and so on. Some of our specialists, they would never ever want to be managers. It's just not part of their self-image to do that sort of work. So it has some effects, but you can't start saying that I want to manage how you feel about yourself. And then there are some definitions, and these are a set of slides that I'm not going to distribute to you. And you can see that some of the definitions are slightly contradictive. This I'm going to skip. Well, this is just to give you an example. In a big corporation, what level of competencies are we talking about? They are very, very general. So, for example, leadership competencies, we're talking about showing direction, building commitment and trust, and so on and so on. I can't really disagree with any of this. It's very, very important. But to map this against the things you actually do on the field, on site, in frontline operations, is sometimes very, very challenging. Okay, this is where I'm going to finish, I think. This was the last slide. So I've given you a theoretical framework about organizational competency, about managing competency, and then I've given you a short example of how one big corporation does this on a corporate level. And if you remember in my theoretical part, there was this kind of levels of competencies. There were core competencies, team-level competencies, individual competencies. And the example that I've shown you from my corporate, and this is what we use every day, it talks about individuals. They are individual competencies, but on the other hand, the level of those competencies is very, very high. So this would be an example of how do you map requirements for individuals against the strategy and objectives of the whole corporation. None of this presentation explained to you how to operate a nuclear power plant, but it does explain to you how to follow the Fortum values, how to do things in a Fortum way, and how on a very, very high level follow the Fortum strategy. Okay, so thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Selma. Very nice presentation.
Thank you, Monica.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation, Televo. When you showed the circle with the triangle, you talked about key behaviors and also key values. It's in the example of your company. Yeah. Could you provide some examples of key behaviors and, for example, a corporate value?
Key behaviors, I think we have four, and I'm not sure if I can remember them correctly. One is co-create, and they're this sort of level, and I think the final one is to celebrate our success. And then there are two more C's, but for some reason I have forgotten what are the two other C's.
Four C's.
There are four forces altogether. That summarizes the whole key behaviors of Fortum. Yes.
Typically, those key behaviors are integrity, having integrity, doing the right thing, making sure your safety culture.
Yeah, I was going to say safety. So those key behaviors typically, and this is going to be great, so when I revise my training for next year, I'll add these, will be, integrity, safety culture, doing the right thing, working well with others, partnershiping, cooperation, collaboration. Those are the kind of the key behaviors from an organizational perspective.
Okay. Yes,
and probably there might be some cultural differences on this definition of the key behaviors, although they are very quite universal, but there might be some cultural differences.
There are, and in the fourth model, actually, the things that David just listed, they are our values. And as Monica said, they are very general. So what David said is very, very close to what our values are. But so we for some reason, we have separated values and key behaviors. And key behaviors are four C's. It was like co-creation, collaboration, celebrate our success, and then something else.
It's more connected with actions, directly connected with actions. No? Any other questions? No? Okay, thank you very much.